more dramatic. All right, thank you very much all for coming today. My name is Jonathan Carter. I work for Microsoft. I'm on a team within the Visual Studio org called the Browser Programmability and Tools team. We build the JavaScript tooling for Visual Studio, the WinJS library for the Windows 8 development, as well as the Chakra runtime for IE. And I'm actually from Florida, born and raised, and today is actually my birthday, so it feels really fitting to, thank you. I was not saying that in a self-congratulatory way, I was just saying that it just feels appropriate to be in Florida on my birthday with the heat and the finals tonight, so it feels like a good day. All right, so the name of this session is JavaScript, the Developer Experience, and what exactly do we mean by that? So hopefully you read the description, but just to set some expectations up front of what we're going to cover in this talk, here's some of the questions that I would like for you to walk away from having a decent answer. So first and foremost, when we're asking of what support does Visual Studio 2012 have if you aren't going to do any type of serious JavaScript development, what tooling do you have, both in the state of writing your app, the editing experience, as well as debugging and diagnostics of an app as well? And then finally, how do you use those tools? What scenarios do they satisfy? And I also want to show some tips and tricks, some kind of more esoteric, advanced things to make you guys feel like you're walking away having a really good breadth of understanding about what we've done to kind of really improve JavaScript tooling. So this talk is not going to talk about JavaScript, the language. My coworker Luke Hoban is doing a talk on that tomorrow. So I'll try to set some context as we go, but just to set the expectations straight, this isn't about learning JavaScript, the language. It's more about the tooling within VS. Okay, so some of you might be asking, okay, great, didn't VS always have tooling for JavaScript? And the answer was yes. In previous versions, there was a JavaScript editor, and there was some degree of support, IntelliSense, and so forth and so on. But the IntelliSense support wasn't quite up to snuff in many ways to what many of you probably expect from Visual Studio in the arena of language support, right? There's a lot to be desired once you've used C# or VB.NET for a while, and JavaScript, the experience just wasn't quite there. And then in a lot of other ways, the editor was also very based on the MS Ajax or Microsoft Ajax patterns, and so therefore it didn't quite support a lot of the third-party libraries that are very prevalent today as well. So let's talk quickly, and most of this session is going to be tons and tons of demos, but just to kind of set the stage first off. So when we're talking about the text editor, the JavaScript editor within Visual Studio, one of the things of note within Visual Studio 2012 is that it's been completely rewritten on top of the JavaScript engine within IE10, Chakra, right? And that affords some really interesting things, mainly because, one, that engine is very fast, and so it allows the tools to do a lot more rich functionality that otherwise wouldn't have been possible, right? Because JavaScript is a dynamic language, and so in order to provide the richest, most accurate IntelliSense, go-to definition, brace matching, you have to actually execute or parse the code, because it isn't a statically typed language that has all this metadata that you can just inspect, like C# does, right? And so in order to do IntelliSense, or all these really nice features that we need and want from JavaScript, you have to run the code. And if you want to run the code, it has to be fast. And so by doing this with Chakra, that gave us the ability to do a ton in Visual Studio 2012. So one thing that we'll notice right away is that even though you already had JavaScript support in the editor within previous versions of VS, there's a whole set of new features that are familiar to many of you that you now get with JavaScript, right? So code folding or regions or outlining, however you call it, brace matching, smart indentation, go-to definition, all of these things now just work natively within your JavaScript source. And then finally, IntelliSense, as I mentioned, has been basically rewritten to accommodate modern practices and modern libraries, right? So because JavaScript, the ecosystem, is so diverse and so agile in its releasing of new libraries, it's important that the JavaScript language service support within the Visual Studio is able to react and respond to these new libraries. Otherwise, it can get stale very quickly. Okay, so talking about IntelliSense very quick, and then we'll jump into demos. So one of the primary things that I get asked all the time is, does Visual Studio support X library? And that's a very fair question. And it can mean any number of things from a tooling perspective. If someone is asking, does it provide you any type of statement completion whatsoever, the answer in 99% of the cases is yes. Because as I mentioned, in order to provide IntelliSense, we're actually running your code. And so as long as the code can run, we can tell you when you dot onto an object, what members does that thing have. And therefore, out of the box, without doing anything, there is really accurate completion list. Now, the next step beyond kind of statement completion that some people might also mean when they ask, does Visual Studio support X, is documentation, right? And so in the previous versions of VS, we only supported one style of documentation within a library, and that was called VSDoc, which was kind of an XML syntax. And not many libraries use that. Now, in Visual Studio 2012, we support now two out of the box, and then we also support extensibility to add more, and I'll show that. And so that enables library authors to use whichever documentation format is most intuitive to them, and then us as developers, when we consume that library, we'll then get that documentation in the case of member descriptions or type metadata on the tooltips. And then finally, as I mentioned, there are going to be times where even though we execute the code and even though we might have rich documentation, there are still semantics that your library might have that we can't deduce, right? So in JavaScript, there are no classes, but you can imagine that there is a library that represents a function as a class, and so they want to maybe show a nice little icon in the completion list to say to the user, oh, think of this as a class. And so that's kind of an example of additional semantics that we want to allow library authors as well as developers working on their own code bases to have control over and be able to modify. Okay, so let's go ahead and jump into some demos. Okay, so what I have here is a blank screen. Hold on, let me wake it up. This is a file new Windows Metro style for JavaScript application. And so one thing also to mention is that all of the JavaScript tooling that I'm going to show will work equally as well whether you're developing for Windows 8 or for just a web application, ASP.NET. So in this case, I'm going to use a Windows 8 app, and then in the later demo, I'll just use a web app just to kind of illustrate that. Okay, so as I mentioned, some of the new enhancements that just kind of automatically light up within the editor that you may notice, one of which is code folding. So if you see here in the bar over here, we notice the familiar little minus plus, right? And so immediately, I'm able to collapse and expand my code. Maybe that's something you take for granted, but that was not available in previous versions of Visual Studio, right? In addition, we also have brace matching. So here, you notice that this event handler, add event listener, is pretty large here. And there's the brace, but I want to see where does this thing close. So I can hover over it, I can hit control bracket, and that's going to take me down to where it closes, right? So yet again, another familiar feature, but just adding more and more parity with other languages and the kind of experience you've expected, right? So I also mentioned smart indentation. So if you're not familiar with that term, basically that just means that when you hit enter on a line, instead of just matching the indentation with the previous line, it will look at the context of the code and determine where it should indent you based on that. So in the case of this if statement, clearly it's typical convention to indent one beyond that of the beginning of the if here. So if I hit enter, right, my cursor goes here. In the previous version of Visual Studio, it would have went here. That's called block indentation. It just always matches that of the previous line. Which is just in most cases not what you actually want. And so that, as I mentioned, because the editor is actually parsing the code, we don't special case any specific patterns to handle smart indentation. It's built to be broadly effective in all scenarios. So if I just start doing a variable declaration list, hit comma and hit enter, notice their smart indentation worked again, which is the typical pattern that a JavaScript developer would use when doing a list of variable declarations. Okay. Now, finally, the fourth item that I mentioned that is a old feature but new to JavaScript is that of GoToDefinition. And this is a big one for folks, usually when you're getting into a new code base. And GoToDefinition just basically means I'm looking at a function or some member that's defined somewhere else, and I want you to take me to it. So for instance, here this code is using WinJS, right? This is what the template generated for me when I did a file new. And I'm curious what this process all function does. So if I just put my caret on it, hit F12, notice it takes me to base.js, which is the WinJS, one of the WinJS libraries, and it takes me straight to the process all. I can navigate back, I can go up to winjs.strictprocessing, hit F12, and it takes me straight there. So that's just kind of moving forward into having richer navigation capabilities within JavaScript, which once again was not something that we had in previous versions. Okay, so now what I want to do is show off a bit of the muscle of the IntelliSense support. As I mentioned, to achieve good IntelliSense on top of a dynamic language, we're actually executing the code. And a lot of other editors or IDEs do have really good JavaScript IntelliSense, but a lot of times they might fall down once things get a bit more dynamic, which seems kind of weird because JavaScript is a dynamic language. And so one thing I want to show is just a couple of demos to highlight to you all just how far our IntelliSense can be accurate, right? So let's go ahead and define an object here. I'll call it OBJ. We'll just give it a new property called one, just for example, right? So if I hit OBJ dot, as you might expect, I get all of the members from object.prototype, which is all of these purple things, and then I see my member here, one. If I hit dot on that, notice that I'm getting all of the members that you would expect for a string. So it's clearly picking this up based on my code. If I change this to a number and I go back here, now I'm going to get number. Right, okay, that seems pretty simple. What if I, instead of using the object literal kind of definition syntax, create a new one as a ad hoc property? And I'll do that. If I go back here, notice two is there, and it gives me string as well. Okay, so far so good. What if I use bracket notation? So I create a third one, and I'll make this an array of numbers. So now if I come back here and do object dot, notice there I see three. If I do dot, I get array IntelliSense. If I do array zero, I even get zero, or I get number IntelliSense. Okay, great. Now what if I use a ECMAScript 5 function, right? I do define property. So this is very common within third-party libraries to make up their API by using object.define property. So if I say, let's define a new property on OBJ, we'll call it foo, and its value will be a function that takes a parameter called a. And just to be fancy, we'll actually return a number from this. Okay. So now if I go obj dot, notice there I do get foo. And if I call it, notice there's a. And in fact, if I hit dot on it, notice I get number IntelliSense, right? So pretty contrived demo, but the point to be had here is that this dynamic makeup of objects is very representative of the way that a lot of libraries are actually building their public API. And so in order for a editor to be able to give you any type of good JavaScript IntelliSense for a library, it would have to be able to respect and handle any possible dynamic nature by which an object is defined, right? So just to prove the point of execution as well, let me just do one other thing. I'll create an array of a number and a string and a boolean. And if I do array.forEach, right, I'm getting good IntelliSense, right? So I'm also trying to highlight that we just have naturally good IntelliSense on the JavaScript integrals as well. So I'll say item index, boo. Okay. Now, if I'm within this and I say, let's say if index equals 0, what would you expect to see if I do item dot here? Well, the index 0 is a number, so I should see number, right? If I change this to 1, I should see string, which I do. And if I change this to 2, I should see boolean, right? Excuse me. I promise the cough was not meant to incite applause. But so the point being here is that this code is literally being run. If you're interested in kind of some of the details, what's actually happening is when I hit dot on this object, we're effectively setting a breakpoint in the code and then running the code until the breakpoint gets hit. And so once we hit that, that naturally ran, and therefore if index equals 2, that item is that item, right? Okay. Now, some interesting things come up though, right, in that if we're executing the code to get this accuracy, that might beg the question of, well, what negative side effects might that have? Because if I do while true and then come down here and then say a equals 23, how does that still work, right? Because that code should never be hit. Well, so obviously we have to be smart enough to do simulations of things that we realize you don't want us to be accurate in that case. And so we do a lot of work as well to make sure if you're within a function after a return statement and you request IntelliSense, obviously we have to throw away the return, right? And so we've made a lot of investments in Visual Studio 2012 to give both that accurate but that expected IntelliSense experience. Okay, so let's take a look at a few other interesting things that I think are pretty neat. So if you are writing some typical DOM code, right, whenever you're writing JavaScript code, you're very rarely probably living in an isolated world where it's just objects, right? You're probably working with the DOM. And so in order for us to continue providing you with useful IntelliSense, we have to know something about the DOM as well. So for instance, let's say I do document.addEventListener, right? This is pretty common. Actually, you would do it on the window, but either way, let's just say I'm hooking up an event handler here. But one thing that anybody that's ever written DOM code knows is that it's impossible to remember what the event args look like for any arbitrary DOM event. And so really IntelliSense should help you there. And if I go in this function, I hit E dot, you'll notice that I get everything that I would expect. Now, excuse me, just to prove the point that this isn't just some static thing, notice that if I type AL, I don't see anything here. Let me change the event to mouse move, and now if I do E dot, I see alt key. So it's actually recognizing it as a mouse move event. And that's because we're smart enough to understand DOM events, and we trigger these things as if they were natural, right? Because obviously there's no way for this to ever be run, because nobody's moving the mouse over the page. Okay. Now another common thing with the DOM is that of element queries. So if I was to do something like this, right, and in most cases you'd probably be using jQuery, but just bear with me here, right, I would expect that I want to get IntelliSense on this element. So in this case, this is a div, and a div is very generic, so it doesn't have anything special. So I get all of the standard members that I would get on any HTML element. Now, the way this is actually working is, notice that this file is default.js, and if I go back to my project, there's a file called default.html that references default.js. And so what the JavaScript language service will do is when you are interacting with the DOM, it will look to see if there are any HTML files that reference the JavaScript file you're within. And if there are, it will provide access to those elements. So in this case, notice there's the div ID content host, and I was able to retrieve it. Excuse me, I'm recovering a little bit from a cold, so I apologize for the coughing. But to prove the point, notice that I have a couple of elements, HTML5 elements, canvas and audio. Now these are interesting because programmatically these have their own unique members. And so if I was to do a document.getElementById on this canvas or this audio, I would expect to see the respective properties. So if I go back to my JavaScript file, and in here I do C, which was the name I gave to the canvas, notice that if I do .getContext, I get that, because the editor is now smart enough to know, oh, that's a canvas. And just to prove the point, if I go back to content host, which was just a div, get context doesn't exist. Now, if I go query for A, which remember was an audio tag, and then I come here and I say dot play, notice there's play, right? So we've tried to make as many of these realistic DOM access patterns that people are going to do all the time as rich as possible, because it isn't just about giving you JavaScript, vanilla JavaScript IntelliSense. It's about giving you IntelliSense on the interaction that you do with the DOM, as well as your own code and third-party libraries. So this is just another example of something that we try to do to make that experience a little bit easier. Okay, so let me show one final thing, just to also touch on the point of addressing modern kind of libraries. So I have a file here called script.js, and all it does is define a global variable called sumGlobal, right? But imagine that I want to dynamically load script.js into my page. And that's very common, obviously, with script loaders. And so if I was to write this code manually, let's say I write create element, and I say script, and then I say source is slash JavaScript slash script.js, and then I just say I inject it into the body. Actually, before I do that, if I say sumGlobal, notice I don't have this. This doesn't exist. This file lives in my project, but I'm not referencing it, and therefore it's accurately not supposed to be shown. But if I inject this into my page, not using access key, and then I say sumGlobal, let's see. Notice now I see some property, and I see the members, right? Now, you would never write this code yourself manually, but under the covers, this is what any script loader is doing, right? It's just taking a dependency file, injecting it into your page, and then giving it access to it. So just to kind of illustrate that a bit better, if I, let's say I come and I reference require.js, and I say within this page, I require, and notice I'm getting IntelliSense on require.js, third-party script loader, and I say I need the require.js slash jQuery 1.7.2. That's the dependency I have, right? And the way that require.js works is that it triggers this callback function with the dependency that you had, which in this case is jQuery. So now, let's see here. Did I spell it wrong? Let's see. No, you don't need it. Let me make sure I didn't spell it wrong. Require.js. JS. No, you don't need it. Require.js is smart enough for it. Did I? Oh. There we go. All right. So one thing our tooling cannot fix is idiot typing code errors. So I've tried. But obviously, yeah. So, as you can see here, I now am using a third-party script loader to dynamically load jQuery, and it's triggering my function. The only reason I have this reference to jQuery and is for the IntelliSense, and I'll explain that in a second. But to take this point even even clearer, let's go ahead and say, dynamically load jQuery, and then once that's loaded, let's go ahead and query for C, and then once that's been clicked, right, because that's a canvas, let's handle that, and then within my script handler, let's grab the target, and let's get context, right? So the rabbit hole gets very deep, and it has to, because you write very complicated code. And so just to prove the point even further, that we're executing the code, we know very well how to understand third-party libraries. Here I'm interacting with both jQuery, DOM event simulation, and a third-party script loader, and I'm getting the IntelliSense that I would expect. Okay. So one final thing that I want to show is, in addition to the out-of-the-box support that we have for IntelliSense, as I mentioned, we also support a new style of documentation, and that is simple double slash and block comments. So if you simply want to supplement your API with descriptions, all you need to do is a double slash regular comment. You don't need to use XML. So for instance, let's say I have some function foo, and I just simply say, this is an important function, and I come down below. Notice, there I get it. Right? In previous versions, you would have had to write a couple lines of XML code to get that. Now, the reason this is very interesting is not just to document your own code, but also to leverage other libraries. So if I come and I reference Backbone.js and I reference underscore, and I come in here and I say underscore dot after, notice I get returns a function only to be executed, blah, blah, blah. If I do an F12, you notice that that works because they simply put a double slash comment above their function, right? And so it's just an example of how when we recognize more patterns of documentation, you automatically benefit by getting libraries that use that style. You get better descriptions as well. Okay. All right, so that's kind of a whirlwind tour of the IntelliSense support. So just kind of to wrap up, right, I mentioned that execution-based accurate completion lists, that provides the majority of the support, and as you saw, we can take it very far, and it supports third-party libraries as well. And then in addition, the addition of the new double slash comments, which allows documentation to be handled much easier. And we have a lot more around it. In fact, let me quickly show one more demo. So as I mentioned, that we have this really rich ability to also extend the editor. And in most cases, you guys would never do this. But just as I mentioned, I want you to walk away feeling like you got a really good contextual view of what we've done. If you go to Tools Options, and you go to Text Editor, JavaScript, IntelliSense, and then References, we have this thing called a reference group. And what that is it's just an IDE-wide set of JavaScript files that are always executed as part of whatever file you're in, right? And so what might be interesting is some of you probably have stumbled upon this and maybe didn't quite know what it was, or maybe some of you did. But what it is it's actually defining a set of extensions that we provide out of the box that give some really interesting functionality that we think most people want. So one is, you notice DOM Windows JS. What that is that's actually a definition of the DOM in JavaScript. Why that's interesting is if you want, you can actually change that. So we got feedback from a customer that didn't like the fact that our DOM simulation actually uses IE10. Because we have to choose one, you have to show some subset of the entire W3C standards, and so we show IE10, right? And so that gives you things like document.all, which this specific customer didn't want to see. He's like, I don't want to see any of these functions that are not standard. And the interesting thing is that you can totally change that if you want, right? So if I come here, and there's this references folder that you can see from the references group, and this gigantic JavaScript file is the DOM as far as the editor is concerned, right? And so if I go ahead and I do a search for document.all, notice this. If I comment this out, go back to my file, document.all is gone. So once again, I mentioned probably we'll never do that, but the standards might evolve quicker than we can, right? So let's say we ship VS 2012, and then some new HTML5 API comes out that was newer than we could respond to. This allows the community to update this file, this DOM file, to handle that, or to make changes, or additions, or removals as they see fit, right? So another more kind of common example of what you might do with an extension is actually the underscore filter. Let me bring that up, and then let me demo real quick what it actually does, what happened to my default file. So it's very common in the JavaScript community, because there is no such thing as private members in an object, to prefix a member that is meant to be private with an underscore. There are some other conventions, but mostly it's underscore, right? And so you might see somebody do something like this, where they define an object, you know, name is Jonathan Carter, and that's okay, but I don't want to expose my age, let's say, for whatever, just turned 28 today. And so if I actually come hit obj dot, you notice I only see name, I don't see age. And that's because out of the box, we provide an IntelliSend extension that looks for members that are prefixed with an underscore, and we hide them for you. Now, you might not want that behavior, or you might like it, but you want to add to it. And the good news is that this is all just JavaScript code, and it is simply just a member in that reference group. So just to bring that back up, if you notice here, here's underscore filter. So if I don't want that functionality, I can just simply remove this, and it will no longer hide these members. Now, if I'm using a library that prefixes privates with a dollar sign, and I want to add to it, I can do that too. So let me bring up underscore filter. And I'm not going to go too much into this, but basically all this is doing is we have this global object called IntelliSense that allows you to listen for events as if they were DOM events, but they're actually just IntelliSense events, like statement completion. So that gets triggered when somebody brings up the completion list. And so what this is saying is that if they go through the list of items in the completion list, and any that start with an underscore get removed, right? So I can extend this, and I'll say, if the item has a name and it starts with an underscore or it starts with a dollar sign, for instance. So let's say your company has the standard internally that you want to prefix all private members with a dollar sign. You might want to do that. And so now if I come back here and I add I just change this to be dollar age, you notice that that's hidden as well. And so this is an example of how we wanted to allow both library authors as well as individual developers to have control over their IntelliSense experience, right? And that if you want to define what it means to be private, or you want to make additions to the completion list, you should be able to do that. In fact, one kind of grand example of an extension is that of adding JS Doc support, right? So as I mentioned, out of the box, we support VS Doc as well as double slash comments, but via an extension, you can also add support for the JS Doc format. So let me go ahead and we don't ship this out of the box, but what I'll do is I'm going to come back to my reference group. I'm going to add a file, go to my desktop, and I have this parse.js.comment.js, and I'm just going to add that. And so all that's doing is now that parse.js.comment file will now be executed along with my code, which allows it to contribute to the IntelliSense experience, which allows me to start documenting my API with JS Doc. So let's say I'm going to create a function called person, and this is a constructor function. And then I'll just go ahead and save off the name here. Right? Now I want to document this using JS Doc, so what I can do is, if you're not familiar with the JS Doc format, basically it is a block comment that starts with an additional asterisk and has a description and then a series of tags. So I'll just say creates a new person, and then I can say param string name, the name of the person, and then I will annotate this as being a class, right? And there are many third-party libraries that do this today. Ember.js is a good example, Angular, Require.js. Now, if I go to use this library, right, this is a format that is not native to VS. We do not support this in 2012, but I just added that JavaScript file to my reference groups. So now if I say new person, notice how person has a different icon than everyone else. That icon is the class icon. So just by simply putting that at class tag in my documentation above the person constructor, the IntelliSense extension was able to modify the list to say, show this guy as a class. Right? Now, in addition, if I go hover over this, notice there's my description. Without the extra asterisk, without the extra ceremony of the formatting of the comment. And then also notice string. Right? So it was able to parse out the fact that that constructor parameter is a string. And then there's the documentation for that parameter. So the net result of this is that out of the box, you get VSDoc and double slash comments. And by adding this extension, which could easily be added to Visual Studio after the fact, you'll now get IntelliSense support in addition to documentation for any third-party library. Because JSDoc, double slash comments, and VSDoc represents pretty much the majority of any style of documentation that any library uses. Right? Okay. The cool thing about IntelliSense extensions is they can do a lot of interesting things. So those are just a few examples of modifying the icon, hiding private members. In fact, let me show one more thing here. So if I create this person, you notice that the two extensions are still working in tandem. So my JSDoc extension showed all of the documentation for my person class, but then the underscore filter extension hid my underscore name person, right? Now, what if I wanted to use JSDoc to do that? So if I took this, now I see name. JSDoc has a convention for doing this. I can say private, right? That's how people would do it in the JSDoc community. And now if I come here, it doesn't work. Okay, all right. So I need to figure out what that is. But you can imagine that the extension could recognize that pattern and say, instead of the pattern of prefixing a member with an underscore, I'm going to recognize the pattern of a JSDoc annotation of at private that is above a member and not show that. Okay. So that was the text editor. There was a lot there, but hopefully the takeaway from that is that there isn't a huge feature set that you have to learn. It is just that the tools are there to support you, right? So you don't have to leave this room having taken notes on the demos I just showed, because it isn't any API that you have to learn necessarily, or any function you have to call. It's that we've tried to build the JavaScript editor and IntelliSense to just work with your code out of the box. Okay. So let's talk about debugging quickly, right? So we just showed the IntelliSense and kind of editing experience. But once you run your application, there's all kinds of other issues that you need to think about, right? So it's very rare that you ever hear somebody just say, I love tracking down CSS styles and where they apply, right? Just because that's not easy. Certainly for a lot of developers, you know, maybe people that are very comfortable and familiar with CSS, but if you're much more of a server-side developer, or you work a lot in C# or Java or whatever, and then coming into learning how to do CSS and how that applies to your code can be very hairy at best, right? And so when we talk about building tools that satisfy the broader problem of doing JavaScript development than just vanilla JavaScript code, it's obvious that you need debugging tools that satisfy the needs of CSS application as well as DOM interaction when you're debugging, right? So in VS 2012, we've made significant improvements to the debugging experience in two areas. First is in the traditional code stepping process, right? So you set a breakpoint, you run code, that code hits the breakpoint, and you're stepping through. In previous versions of Visual Studio, there was a lot of data that wasn't available to you to see when you're at a breakpoint. So if you're looking at your locals, you couldn't see what was the prototype hierarchy of the object, what is the closures that are available or were captured in this current scope, what is the this binding, and then also just doing some grouping of methods so that it isn't as cluttered as possible. Because typically when you're looking at locals or you're stepping, you're examining data properties. You're not looking to see the methods that something has. So we've done a lot of work to rationalize the locals and watches window such that when you're stepping through code, it's both very flexible and then it shows you all of the possible data you would want to see, but it shows it in a clean way that it doesn't overwhelm you if you're not looking to see the prototype chain, for instance. And then finally, we've added a set of new debug windows. And so many of you are probably familiar with the browser-based tools that every browser has, F12 and IE and Firebug for Firefox. And web development has amassed a workflow that is very iterative, very guess and check, so to speak. And that's just the nature of how it is, right? People tend to work better if they're doing CSS work or DOM work if they can quickly see the effects of their changes right away. And so we've recognized that need, and we've brought that kind of iterative debugging experience into VS. That way, you didn't have to write your app in the Visual Studio Editor and then go to another tool to be able to get that iterative debugging process. So the windows that we've brought are going to add getting that DOM visualization, right? Understanding how did the browser render or interpret your HTML into a DOM structure. How did your CSS files go from one or two or three or more files into actually being applied to an element? How can you trace which ones were applied? How can you trace which ones weren't? And then finally, there's a lot of scenarios where you want to programmatically interact with your application. And so just having a JavaScript console while you're running, being able to look at the state of your app at any given time, being able to make changes to your DOM programmatically, end up just being very interesting for folks, depending on how intuitive you find that workflow. Okay, so let's go ahead and jump into a demo of debugging. And I'm going to go into another demo. This time, this is a web app. There's a community project called ToDo MVC that is very cool if you've never heard of it. Basically, what it seeks to try to do is show the same simple ToDo app in every possible JavaScript application framework, just because there's so many. There's like a million. And so it makes it easy if you're trying to evaluate, do I use Backbone.js, do I use Angular, do I use Ember.js, do I use Knockout? You can easily just download all of those and look to see which API or which kind of code pattern of those fits your needs best, instead of having to do a full kind of evaluation. So anyway, so I'm going to use the Backbone version of the ToDo MVC app to kind of demonstrate some of the debugging enhancements that we've done. So I'm just going to go ahead and hit F5 here. And the app is about as simple as you can imagine, right? It just is a ToDo app. So let's see. Fly to Orlando, right? And meet my family and remind myself how nasty hot it is here. Yeah. Okay. So I've done this, and I've done this. I've lived in Seattle for the last 5 years, and I'm already over the heat, the humidity. Okay. And so as you check it, you notice that they go red, and then I can clear the items if I wanted to. Get a water afterwards, right? And so forth and so on. Very simple. In addition, you can double-click an item and modify it, so get a water after the talk, right? Now, but something seems to be broken here because I want to be able to focus out and actually have that turn back into a label, right, instead of a text box. So let's go ahead and do a little debugging. So if I go back to Visual Studio, I can imagine that this is a text box, and the event that happens after you click out of it, right, is called blur. So let's go ahead and do a search for blur. And in Backbone vernacular, when you define a view, and don't get really bogged down by this, this is just simply saying, when the blur event happens on an element whose class is ToDoInput, call a function called close. Okay. So that then tells me, all right, I need to go find the close function. So let me search for close. And here we go. So I'm going to put a breakpoint, come back to my code, put my cursor in there, and blur out. Okay. So everything seems to be okay. It's doing some model save code that looks fine. But I need to understand a bit more about the state of the app to know what might be going wrong. So let me go to debug, Windows, and bring up my locals. And as I mentioned earlier, we've enhanced the locals and watches quite a bit to show you a lot more data. But hopefully things are still a bit organized such that it isn't overwhelming. So here we notice that at the bottom we have this item called globals. And as you might imagine, that is just simply an aggregation of all of the global objects in the current state of the app. So here we have jQuery, which has two names. We have underscore, backbone, and a few other things. Excuse me. Above that, we have an item called scope, right? Which is just simply a scope, right? So underneath the global is another closure in JavaScript terminology that here we notice is all of the objects that this application has defined, the to-do list, the to-do view, so forth and so on. Now, what I really want to get at here is what is this, the this binding in the context of this function? Because that might shed some light on how I can fix this. So we have L, we expand that, and if we go and maybe L is the element, and if I come over here and I look and see, okay, so this is of type HTML li element. So that's some kind of thing relating to my page, my markup. But I have no idea what it actually is. And so if I come over to the JavaScript console, which is one of the new tool windows in Visual Studio 2012, and I just simply type this.l, right, which is valid code based on the context of where I'm at, I immediately get a markup visualization of what exactly this is. And I say, okay, that's interesting. So I now know that the close is being triggered on the list item that represents the task, the to-do. So that seems to be a good start. And in fact, I'm starting to think that the problem is that there's this class called editing. That doesn't make sense. But I'm still not sure where in the scheme of my DOM this li lives. And so let me bring up the DOM Explorer, which is another tool window. And I can actually integrate the DOM Explorer and the JS console together. So let me say, let's go ahead and select the this.l element in that tree. And so there, notice, it expanded the tree out to show me this is where it is. And I say, okay. So the li above it, which represents the meet my family, doesn't have the class editing, but the one that is broken does. So that seems to be the problem. So let me come back to my JavaScript console, and let me run some jQuery code on this thing. I'll say this.l.remove class, and I'll say editing. All right, run that. Continue. And that worked, right? So the great thing about those tools is that at any given time of that debugging process, there was a different way of thinking that might have been the most intuitive for trying to understand what the problem was, right? You have the traditional code stepping process of being able to see locals and stuff, but when I was looking at the element that was on the this object, it wasn't enough. It just didn't help me to know what the problem was. And so being able to quickly evaluate that in the console and see, oh, that's the fragment that of HTML that this is, okay, that makes a bit more sense. And then being able to then map that into the overall DOM and then make that change to remove the class just worked a lot better, right? So now if I refresh this and I click in here and then I click out, it's still going to be broke because I haven't updated my source. But that's the point of these tools, make it such that you can quickly investigate potential solutions instead of having to keep going back to your code, making a change, F5, go back, F5, and then continue to do that process, right? So now that I know the solution, I could go back to my code and simply write the code I did before. In fact, if I look at the edit, I just need to do the inverse of what this guy was, so I just can go ahead and copy this, but instead of saying add, I'll do remove, right? Okay. All right, so let's go ahead and look at this DOM Explorer a bit more. because I like that opening demo because it kind of shows a bit of an end-to-end usage of the code stepping and the console and the DOM Explorer. But what can the DOM Explorer do when looking at it a bit more cohesively? So if you notice, if I come over here, let me start hovering over some items. You notice on the right the active attached instance of IE, as I'm hovering over an element in the DOM Explorer, it is highlighting it, giving me a visual cue, oh, this is that guy. Okay. So if I, let's say, start expanding some things, here's the create to do. Okay. Now, if I come over to the IE side and I start typing something in this text box, for instance, take a look at the left side and you'll see this yellow update happening, which is showing me visually updates are happening to the DOM based on changes you're making. So in this case, two things are happening. The value property of the input is being updated, and then also the little tooltip is popping up, which is changing the display of the span. Now, in addition to just kind of attributes, if I was to expand the to-dos, the li, right, notice right now there are two li's in here because there's two items. So let me just create a test one, right? And if I immediately come back over here, there's now three, which if I expand, now you see test, right? Now let me change it on this side. So let me change this to test two. Come back over here, test two, right? So it's bidirectional in that it allows me to once again think about how do I most intuitively need to figure out what I want to do here to get the achieved effect. So let's say I want to change the to-dos label to to-dos app, right? So if I come over here, there's this button called select element. Click that. Click to-dos. There we go. Change that to to-dos app. And that looks great, right? And now I can go back and update my source if that's what I wanted. But once again, just to iterate the fact that that is allowing me to do kind of what I want. Now, that's kind of basic DOM interaction. Let's talk about CSS tracing, which is, in many cases, the significantly harder problem, right? So some of you might have noticed that when we check an item, it's indicating an item is complete by making it red, which is pretty goofy. That doesn't really seem to be a very good UX. And so what I'd like to do is figure out, one, where is the CSS at that is making this red, and two, do some tweaks to see whether we can make this look a bit nicer, to make it look a bit more like it's completed. So let's go select element, click this item, and let's take a look at these tabs over on the right side of the DOM Explorer a bit. So what this styles tab is this is showing every CSS rule that has matched this element. So that's going to end up including a few things. So here, this is a rule that matches every element in HTML. So of course, that matches, but that's not very interesting to us. Here's another one. But notice this looks very interesting. Here we have a CSS rule that says, match any element whose class name is toDoContent that is a child of an element whose class name is done, that is an element of a, or that is a child of an element whose ID is to-do list. Okay. But at least we can see that it's red, right? So if I uncheck this and come back, notice it immediately goes to black. If I check it, so now I clearly know the source of that nasty red color. And so in addition to just turning it on or off, I want to change it. So I want to say, let's make this a nice shade of gray, let's say 777. And now it goes gray, so that's pretty nice. But it's still not quite enough to really pop and show me that it's been completed. So let me right-click on this and say add new property and say text decoration equals line through. And there, that looks a lot nicer, right? And so I was able to quickly make that change and quickly track down where that style was coming from and see how I might want it to look. And so in this case, I think that looks pretty good. Now, one thing that is not so great is the alignment of these checkboxes. And so I might want to figure out who's setting any of the margins or padding on these things. So if I come back and select element, grab this guy, this time I'm going to use the second tab here. Actually, what I'm going to do is I'm going to use the layout tab. The layout tab is nice. Let me go ahead and close this guy, because it allows you to visualize the box model. Here, let me minimize this and give myself a bit more space. It allows you to visualize the box model of the element you're working with. So here, starting in the center, here's the actual content. It's 19 by 19. Here's the padding. It's got 3-pixel padding all around. Has no border whatsoever. But notice here it has a margin on the left side, 7 pixels, and on the right side, 10 pixels. And so I'm thinking that I don't want the 7 pixels on the left. And so I'm going to go ahead and use the Trace Styles tab to turn that off. Now, quickly to rationalize between styles and trace styles, is the Styles tab is going to show you every CSS rule that is applied to this element, which sometimes that's the way you're thinking. You're thinking, well, who is setting this red? And you can go and find it. But in a lot of other cases, you might just be thinking, I know the exact CSS property that I want to know the value of and who's setting it, and so I want to just track that down instead of trying to find the rule that it is a part of. And that's what Trace Styles is for. So I know based on the Layout tab that the margin left is what I want to change from 7. And so if I come down into Trace Styles, I can see margin left. We notice that somebody is setting it to 7 pixels here on this selector. Excuse me. So if I just go ahead and uncheck this and then come back to my app, you'll notice that now everything is nice and flush, right? So once again, and I hate to beat the dead horse, there are many, many different ways of going into a problem and thinking about what's the best way to solve it. And that's why we have both the styles and the trace styles. Because sometimes you're going to know what the property name is and you want to go straight to the value. Sometimes you don't know what the property name is, you just want to see what's being applied. And sometimes you might want to see just generally what the layout is. Okay, so that's kind of a overview of the DOM Explorer, right? It allows you to interact with the DOM, it allows you to trace CSS styles, and it gives you that bi-directional kind of ability to do guess and check tweaks to get the UX that you really want without having to go back to your source for every single CSS change. Okay, so real quick, let's also take a little bit of a deeper look at the JavaScript console just to get an idea of the power that that thing can have. So notice that I closed it. So if you ever accidentally close it and you want to bring it back up, you can just go to Debug, Windows, JavaScript console. Okay. So I'm going to close the DOM Explorer just to get the view nice and clean. So in the previous demo, I showed using the JavaScript console while at a breakpoint, which is very useful because it allows you to evaluate kind of the state of the app at that breakpoint. But there's a lot of other times where you might be interested in interacting with the app at just the global sense. And so even though I'm not at a breakpoint right now, I can still interact with my app programmatically. And so, for instance, I can say document, right? And there's the JavaScript object that represents my document. I can say document.body, right? And once again, we see here that it was smart enough to recognize that the object I was evaluating was a HTML element. So it's showing me the actual content in the DOM. Now, if that's not what I wanted, I can right-click on this and say, no, I want to evaluate this as an object. And now I can see the HTML body element object that represents that DOM. In addition, you can do it programmatically by using a special function called dir. So I can say dir, like directory, show me the whole thing, document.body. And there I get the same effect. Just two different ways to do that. Okay. So let's show a couple of interesting things that we can do. Now, this demo is actually saving the contents of the to-do app in local storage using the HTML5 local storage API. That way it persists when you close the browser. So if I was to come here and say local storage, just because out of curiosity I want to know what's there, we notice that here is the JSON string that represents that object. So let me go ahead and just parse that, and I'm going to make some modifications to it. So we'll say JSON.parse local storage todos backbone. Okay. So now I have this object. So let's say I want to test out that my code works correctly if I update the local storage data without using the UI. So let's find, here's the get a water after the talk, meet my family. Here's the test one. So I'm going to go ahead and let's just, for programmatic's perspective, let's go ahead and delete this guy. So we'll say delete OBJ this one. Huh? So if I go back, I just deleted him. So now let's go ahead and store that back into local storage. It was todos backbone. And then we'll serialize that back into a string. So we'll JSON.stringify OBJ. So now if I come back to my app and hit F5, I should expect to see the test item gone because I wanted to test whether my code was actually working. And there it is, right? So the JavaScript console allowed me to programmatically do the interaction with my persistent store, in this case local storage, without having to go through the UI. That way I can get a bit more of a backdoor testing. Now I can do anything else I want from the console. So let's say I want to just go ahead and create a new element. So we'll say div equals document.createElement. Div, and we'll give that some content. We'll just say this is dynamic, right? And because I have access to the DOM from here, there's no reason why I can't insert that into this live page. So I'll just say document.body.appendChild div. Okay, so there it is. What did I do wrong here? It's interesting that it, let me try that again. Div is on, okay. I might have, let me restart this here. Just to make sure all is well. Okay. So, document.createElement, div.textContent equals test. And then document.body.appendChild div. Okay. Yeah, something screwy must have happened. Right. So there's my test. Now, as you remember, I can integrate with the DOM Explorer by using the select. So let me go bring the DOM Explorer back up. So if I go to DOM Explorer, and then I say select div, the one that I just dynamically inserted, right? That brings it up here. Now, I can say, all right, let's go ahead and add an attribute on this called ID myDiv. Great. So now my div has an ID. Now let's go to the styles, and let's add an entirely new rule. Now notice that it was smart enough to pick up the fact that the currently selected element has an ID of myDiv, and so I probably wanted my rule to be pound myDiv. So let me hit enter there. Now I'm going to say I want to text align center this thing. Okay. So if I zoom out now, notice test is centered. Now one thing I didn't show is how can the console integrate or interact with the currently selected item in the DOM tree, in the DOM Explorer, right? I showed how you can do select to kind of pass the current element from the console to the DOM Explorer, but what about vice versa? Because what if I want to programmatically do something to this text? So if I bring back open the console, debug Windows JavaScript console, and I simply say $0, what that does is that refers to the currently selected element in the DOM Explorer. And I can use this as if it was any other variable. So if I say $0.textContent equals I just changed it, and then I come over here, notice that it was changed, right? So lots and lots of different ways that I can do really interesting things using the DOM Explorer, the JS console, as well as the enhanced debugging tools. But really, the point that I wanted to get across is that at none of the times to do any of these changes did I have to go back to my source, or did I have to do a text search. Right? I never had to go do a control F and search for text decoration or color equals red. I was able to quickly see a visualization of what my DOM looked like, what my CSS rules were, and then quickly interact with it programmatically from the console. Okay. So in summary, hopefully you guys feel like after some of these demos that JavaScript truly is a first-class language in VS 2012. That between the IntelliSense and the overall editor support that we did to make it so accurate but yet so extensible to accommodate all these libraries, that'll make your lives a lot easier when you're writing more and more JavaScript code. And then in addition, bringing those kind of iterative, quick check, very agile workflow debugging tools into the IDE, hopefully that'll make it such that you don't have to do more context switches while you're actively debugging your app. So with that, that is all I have. Hopefully this was useful to you guys. I know it was a lot to take in. And yeah, if you have any questions, I know there was a lot here. Please feel free to email me. My email was on the very first slide. I'll bring that back up. Or come up and ask me a question. And thank you very much for coming.